Well, anti-Trump media bias is self-created, self-fulfilling, mainstream media referential, and utterly reflective of the resident paradigm. The godless religion of unpatriotic ogres, hyper-knee-jerk persons carrying the anti-American virus, causing fever, blinded leftists bred and trained to hate everything wholesome. These are the true disciples of their father who moil in the dead of night, celebrating the murder of the unborn, the release of the guilty, reinforcing the seducers of children, and attending their daddy's black mass. Can Trump escape this vicious media spin cycle which knows no survivors? It will take more art and skill than he has shown so far. He must hurdle canyons, climb mountains, ford glaciers, and still make it back for the next news cycle. Don't bet against him, friends. In the coming months and weeks, all will be revealed. Zombie hunters, vampire killers, and the rest battling the dark armies of the one true infidel. This should be interesting. Good morning. 607, a little tongue-in-cheek there, but there does seem to be something strange going on in the media right now with this. Basically, this battle over Trump, which is very reminiscent to me of John McCain, what he went through. He was a media darling until he was became the nominee, and then all hell broke loose against him, which I thought was. It was inevitable. It's, I think, notable that John McCain thought he would personally supersede that. I think it was very naive. He fell in love with the media, and the media let him down because the media isn't behind any one particular person, even Obama. It's not behind them. What the media is for, if you pay attention, is for leftism, is for liberalism, socialism, whatever. And the media protects its own. And so what we see now with Trump is the same thing. And he should have, I mean, I'm sure that he did realize that these things were creeping up on him. He's about 9 points down right now. And I don't think it's going to get worse, but what he's got to do is figure out how to get his message out and to just get that out there and keep that out there and not make the entire thing be about him. Although, you know, it's a campaign which is to a large extent about the two personalities more than just about anything that you've ever seen. Now, there is a really weird story out right now that is so strange. I've just got to immediately report it to you. It kind of broke overnight, and I had mentioned to you before there was some people that had died that were associated with campaigning right now, and one of which is Seth Rich. And now he's the guy that worked for the DNC, and Julian Assange seems to insinuate that he was the WikiLeaks source of the information, that it wasn't the Russians at all, that it was this kid. Now, I'm going to play you a little clip of this to begin with, but you remember when I said there were these three people that were killed? Was that yesterday? In the last couple of days? And he was working for the DNC, and so they've got this situation where this kid had fought. His knuckles were bruised. His knees were bruised. He had put up some sort of a hellacious fight and had ended up being shot in the back. They didn't take his phone. They didn't take his wallet. They didn't take his vehicle. So there was something else going on. He didn't have a known enemy. He was very popular with the people. But, you know, what could have been happening is there's a lot of, in the millennial group, there are some people that are very, very, very idealistic, like with any group of young people, and he might have seen stuff going on with Hillary's campaign that he couldn't stomach and wanted to get into the media but didn't want to release it directly. So think about this. The Russians have nothing to do with it. The argument that Trump has no connection to the Russians is that Trump spent years, his entire life almost, it would seem, trying to get stuff built in Russia and was never able to do it. So he doesn't seem to have any special connection over there. On the other hand, Hillary does. But here's a little bit on Seth Rich, the murdered intern, or basically he was a staff member, staff worker at DNC. Good-looking kid, you know, in shape, dressed well and everything. Suddenly shot in the back in one of these suburbs, D.C. suburbs. It didn't make any sense. Maybe it's starting to make sense now.
An Omaha family is grieving tonight after their son was shot and killed in Washington, D.C. over the weekend.
Seth Rich was born and raised in Omaha. He worked for the Democratic National Committee in D.C. New at 10, reporter Nick Starling spoke to his parents tonight. Nick?
Kevin, Jen, Seth Rich's parents say he had a passion for helping others, and it showed in his work at the DNC. But now that work is cut short, and his parents are still trying to find information on why someone would do this to their son.
Seth Rich's parents looking for answers after he was shot and killed in Washington, D.C. Sunday morning.
If it was a robbery, it failed because he still had his watch, he still had his money, he still had his credit card, he still had his phone. So it was a wasted effort, except we lost a life.
Seth's dad, Joel Rich, says his son was talking to his girlfriend on the phone outside D.C.'s largely upscale Northwest Quadrant at the time.
Asked him if he was home yet. He said, just about. And then she heard some noise. He said he'd have to call her back. And I don't know when that conversation ended, but at 4:18, there were two shots fired.
Seth was shot twice. Police found Rich conscious and breathing, but he died in a hospital. Seth's parents say he had a lot of potential.
The sad part are all the unfulfilled promises or possibilities that he could have had. That's what we'll miss.
Seth went to Central High School, then studied political science at Creighton and moved to D.C. Seth was the voter expansion data director for the DNC.
Making sure everybody who wants to vote has the opportunity.
One of the things they will miss about Seth is his positivity.
Our son may have had a short life, but he had a very wonderful life that he smiled and enjoyed.
Now, through this pain, Seth's parents say they have to find a way to get through this.
I've got to remember all the good and all the positive, and that's what will make Seth's life a value versus wasting.
All right, so this story has one thing that's very, very interesting to it that you are going to find you're going to find it jaw-dropping. You're going to find it possibly part of a novel, a John le Carré novel or whatever, a spy novel. It seems possible that this kid was about to go meet the FBI. So if he had information that could have influenced... And I'm not, as anybody listens to the show knows, that I'm not a conspiracy person, but that doesn't mean there's no conspiracies, number one. And number two, you don't need a wide ranging conspiracy to explain something like this. The people that you're dealing with, if you find out the things that they think that the Clintons are doing with this charity, where they got tons of money, for example, for this work in Haiti, and it doesn't appear that the Clintons actually did anything in Haiti, so they got paid a bunch of money and took it and apparently put it into their own pockets, into their own charity. We're talking about a new world here. This is not the burglary gang of Richard Nixon. This is a brave new world. Do I think it's possible that the DNC or somebody in the Hillary campaign had this guy killed? I really don't know enough about this. I'm just finding it out. But I'm operating under the theory that let's follow the facts, Let's take a little break here and then come back and hear what Julian Assange says. He basically says, without saying it, because he brings it up out of the blue, that this kid was working for him when he was killed. Now put the pieces together. WikiLeaks has badly damaged Hillary's campaign. They put out the information about Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who was removed. Julian Assange, who runs WikiLeaks, has said they've got enough stuff to put her in prison, Hillary in prison. She just dodged an indictment from the FBI. And when the FBI director, James Comey, stood up there and he put out all this information on what she had done and then said, but no prosecutor would ever indict on this. You know, thousands of prosecutors across America said, au contraire. But we therefore know that the FBI has become compromised. If this kid was coming to meet with the FBI, I would assume if you're going to follow this, if you're going to turn this into a spy novel, the FBI then contacts somebody. There's a mole in the FBI, which we already know about. I mean, Bill Clinton met with Loretta Lynch, the sitting attorney general, and after that, almost immediately after that, the case was dismissed against Hillary. So we know that there are operatives all throughout this government. The FBI contacts Hillary Clinton's campaign, and next thing we know is this kid is killed in the middle of the night. And they don't, it's not a burglary. So it's some other reason. So anyway, we'll be right back. 618 on the button, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450. 523-1450. Wouldn't it be fascinating if this could somehow be traced to the Democratic National Committee or to even higher up into Hillary's campaign? What's interesting about Case is that this kid, every picture of this kid, or just about every picture of this kid, the Seth Rich that was killed, and he was in his young 20s, almost every single one of them, he was dressed up patriotically, you know, red, white, and blue, and it makes you think that maybe there was something different about him. He might have been more patriotic than the average Democrat staffer. So anyway, let me play you a little bit of this clip from it is really interesting stuff, folks. And the connections seem like there. It doesn't mean that the DNC had him killed or Hillary's campaign or whatever. I mean, you know, D.C. is a violent place, but for somebody to be shot, it seemed personal. If you're in a fist fight where you're in a fight with somebody, you're fighting back, and then you end up getting shot. And I believe he was shot in the back, but I have to do a little more research. But it obviously wasn't a robbery. So somebody wanted him dead. But the question is, was it random or was it a hit?
Donald Trump has had a disastrous few weeks. If you look at the polls, he needs a miracle. In the American political lexicon, there's such a thing as the October surprise. The stuff that you're sitting on, is an October surprise in there?
Mike Cernovich, this is his show. And Julian Assange is here, and he's the head of WikiLeaks.
Do you even know what you're sitting on?
WikiLeaks never sits on material. Our whistleblowers go to significant efforts to get us material, and often very significant risks. As a 27-year-old who works for the DNC, we shot in the back, murdered, just 2 weeks ago for unknown reasons as he was walking down the street in Washington. So
that was just a robbery, I believe, wasn't it?
No, there's no finding. So
what are you suggesting?
I'm suggesting that our sources take risks, and they become concerned to see things occurring like that.
But was he one of your sources then? I mean,
we don't comment on who our sources are.
But why make the suggestion about a young guy being shot in the streets of Washington?
Because we have to understand how high the stakes are in the United States, and that our sources are, you know, our sources face serious risks. That's why they come to us, so we can protect their anonymity.
But it's quite something to suggest a murder. So, that's basically what you're doing.
Well, that others have suggested that. We are investigating to understand what happened in that situation with Seth Rich. I think it is a concerning situation. There's not a conclusion yet. We wouldn't be willing to state a conclusion, but we are concerned about it. And more importantly, a variety of WikiLeaks sources are concerned when that kind of thing happens.
All right, so you've got this young kid that was killed, and he was, according to, you have to, you know, I've never heard Julian Assange say anything that was kind of not careful, you know, because he's dealing in all these secrets, and he's got, I think WikiLeaks always has more stuff that they're able to throw out. He said that, I mean, just listen to the commentary there. He says, in as freely as he could possibly do it, given the rules at WikiLeaks, that this kid was the one who was supplying the information. Now, if this young man decides I'm gonna throw this information over to the FBI before this case is decided on Hillary, I mean, it just, I don't know. It seems to me like it's too much of a coincidence. Here's a little bit more on the Seth Rich getting murdered.
You might have heard that the FBI is investigating the cyber attack on the Democratic National Committee, or DNC, that resulted in the massive email leak. If you did hear about it, you probably heard that the FBI is investigating Clinton's claim that the Russians are behind the hack. But you probably didn't hear about another incident around the DNC that is being investigated too, which is this. A DNC staffer was mysteriously murdered in the middle of the night and police have no leads. Seth Rich was 27, worked for the DNC, and a couple of weeks ago, he was shot twice and killed in the middle of the night on a street in Washington, D.C. Right after, Clinton used his murder as a way to tout gun control. And the Washington Post, a paper owned by Jeff Bezos, a man who really likes the establishment and was just appointed to an advisory board by the Pentagon, used the murder to talk about how dangerous D.C. is. They did a lengthy piece about robbery in D.C., and that's about as far as the story went, as far as the media was concerned. Only problem is, the cops say there was no evidence of a robbery. Rich's mother backs that up. Whoever shot and killed this DNC staffer took nothing but his life. He still had all of his money, his credit cards, his watch, his phone. The cops posted a $25,000 reward for any information, and if they found anything else as of this moment, they aren't saying. But you wouldn't know that, probably, because no one in the media is reporting this murder. So the DNC was just hacked. A huge, major crime that the FBI is investigating. And no one in the media is reporting that one of the DNC's employees who had ready access to the email servers was just mysteriously murdered in the middle of the night. Don't you think that's a part of the story worth mentioning, at least? Instead, they're only reporting Clinton says Russia did it. Now, I am certainly not saying that Rich was the leaker and that Clinton stole out of the middle of the night and shot him herself. Not at all. I'm just saying, when I only hear one narrative being told by our media and it's all speculative, and I see another very real narrative not being told, I tend to come to one conclusion. Our media sure sucks.
And they need to do policy on whether.
Sorry about that. Another one of these pages just started barking. Hold on a second here. Anyway, just the end of this thing right here.
Conclusion. Our media sure sucks at investigating, whether it's intentional or not. Tonight, let's talk about that.
All right, so look. Let me just ask you this. I know that there's a lot of smart, educated, and uneducated but intelligent people that listen to the show. I just, you know, and some of you are on the right, some of you are on the left, Republicans and Democrats. Just, you know, take off the party affiliation for a moment and put on your thinking cap. What are the chances that this is random when there's a hack in the DNC immediately says, we know it's the Russians. And then the media picks that up. We know it's the Russians. All right. Fast forward a few more weeks. And this kid gets killed. Now, obviously, if he was the leaker, he would have had to been killed after he leaked the information, but I don't know the timeline in terms of when the information was released versus when he was killed. But they say that there's a bias for Julian Assange against Hillary Clinton. What if that bias comes out in part from the fact that this kid ends up dead? And maybe Julian Assange has heard that or knows that it was a hit as opposed to just some random violence. But Julian Assange basically says in so many words, as close as he could, that this kid was the leaker. What are the chances that the leaker of these emails that caused so much problem for the Democrats, what are the chances that he gets murdered, not in a robbery, but just apparently randomly in the middle of the street, shot? What are the and he is the leaker. What are the chances that it's a coincidence? 5-2-14-50. We'll take a break and come back, and I'll just see if I can find a little bit more information about this murder. 6:31. This is breaking news, though, and we'll be right back. AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523 1450, and 805-6180. All right, so 635, I'm seeing here that it is WikiLeaks that is offering $20,000. That's a lot of money. I'm just going to take the word of Julian Assange and the fact that they're putting up this huge reward as some of the evidence that he is the leaker. Now, I don't know. I mean, I just read something that said that this guy was not on his way to an FBI meeting, but if he was, the FBI needs to come forward and let us know about that, especially if it had to do with the Hillary Clinton situation, which is now closed. Seth Rich claimed to be a data analyst for the Democratic National Committee. You know, you've got some of these people, some of these young people, are super far to the, they're so far to the left that they're kind of in the libertarian camp, and they're in their own way very patriotic. Yeah, okay, so this is from heavy.com, a little more analysis on this. And if you're just tuning in, Seth Rich was a vote data analyst for the DNC. And around the time of the obviously before what Debbie Wasserman Schultz was fired from her job as the head of the DNC, information was leaked in which they showed that there was collusion against Bernie Sanders. And so they were not going to let him get the nomination no matter what. Then this kid is killed, and now Julian Assange, who's the head of WikiLeaks, has come out. And WikiLeaks is this group that releases all this government information that they hack up out of these computers. He said that this is his leaker. He was killed. He was shot to death in Washington, D.C. Robbery could not have been a motive. They didn't get his watch, his phone, or his wallet. The Washington Post wrote on July the 11th. Oh, by the way, he was shot July the 10th. And the another guy that's dead is Sean Lucas, the guy that served the DNC with a lawsuit alleging presidential fraud in the presidential race. All right, so the Washington Post writes, police said they have no suspects, witness, or motive, though they are looking at whether Rich could have been slain in an attempted robbery. The Metropolitan Police Public Affairs told Heavy.com on August 9th, at this time, there is no indication that Seth Rich's death is connected to his employment at the DNC. However, we welcome information that could potentially lead to the identification of the individuals responsible for his death, and we are pleased when any outside contributors help us generate new leads. Number one, his father said the key items were not taken, even though it's being called a possible robbery. And they put up the police blotter, the police report on this. Number two, there was a struggle before Rich was shot multiple times, including at least once in the back. So if you're shot in the back, I think you're either kind of running away or you're on the ground. And this guy, this kid has got so many different red, white, and blue outfits. It's amazing. Rich's mother told NBC Channel 4 in Washington, D.C., her son's hands were bruised, his knees are bruised, his face is bruised, and yet he had two shots to his back, and yet they never took anything. Washington, D.C. Medical Examiner's Office told Heavy that Rich died from gunshot wounds to the torso in the manner of death was a homicide. Okay, and they said that when they got there, he was breathing at first. He told his girlfriend she heard a noise when he was on the phone with her, and he told her not to worry. Yeah, okay, all right, so if somebody pulls up, let's say the noise was somebody in the street, pulls up in a van or something, if he says not to worry, does that mean that he recognized him? Could it be somebody he knew from the DNC? Number three, Hillary Clinton mentioned Rich's death in a July speech, and Debbie Wasserman Schultz praised him. Wow. Rich, number four, worked on the DNC's voter expansion efforts and described himself as a data analyst. On his link page, he says, experienced and impassioned data analyst, I have an enormous interest in public service and working towards making the world a better place. Before that, he was a research data associate for Greenberg Quinlan Rosner, a boating education director and staff program director at Camp Ramah in Wisconsin. And conspiracy theories have spread it up online about Rich's murder, and Julian Assange wouldn't confirm or deny him being the leak. Well, now he has confirmed it, and all right, so let's take another break here, but anyway, you know, my gut tells me there's more to the story. You don't have to be Sherlock Holmes to see that this case is rife with potential. Now, here's my question for you. Whether you're right, on the right or on the left, there are, by the way, people on the left, they're Democrats who believe that Clinton is a pathological liar, and yet they will still back her before Trump. Do you believe that Hillary Clinton or her group is capable of murder? That's all I'm asking. Capable. Do they have the mindset? Are they a bad group of people? Are they so bad that they would even contemplate murder to save her campaign? Just asking if you think that would even be theoretically possible. You might say, well, that's a reckless question. Well, as I said before, follow the facts. Where do the facts lead you? Anybody's incapable of anything. 641, 642 on the button. AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523-1450 to call in, and 805-6180 to text. We'll be back. All right. So we had talked yesterday to a large extent about Hillary Clinton and whether she was sick or not. And there was, you know, she's had this head injury. She's had dizzy spells. Her assistants say that we have to read her emails and her phone messages because she gets easily confused. There are some people that think that she has a concussion-like syndrome. She's had to wear double vision glasses. And she has to carry with her a diazepam pen, meaning, you know, it's a little thing to administer a shot of some sedative if she has a convulsion. That they think that she's got Jacksonian seizures, which I think, and I let me I'm calling them Jacksonian, but I don't know. Didn't mean to bring in the former president. It might be just Jackson seizures, but anyway, doing my feeble multitasking here. Oh, okay, it is a Jacksonian seizure, huh? So anyway, there is in the coughing could be associated with a stroke, and we've had clips of her suddenly hitting vapor lock, suddenly hitting, you know, freezing up. Jacksonian seizure, a form of epilepsy involving brief alteration in movement, sensation, or nerve function caused by abnormal electrical activity in a localized area of the brain. So she's talking to a reporter, and all of a sudden she gets this weird kind of rictus, this weird smile on her face, and her head starts bobbing back and forth. She starts laughing and turning. And this reporter seems horrified, or maybe a little bit overwhelmed. But anyway, that would be a physical symptom. But here's the question: if Hillary Clinton is involved in this Clinton Foundation, then she knows that it's a fake charity, right? Her husband is said to have molested or abused many different women. And the claim out there is that Hillary was a gatekeeper on these things. Hillary's the one who called them bimbo eruptions. Hillary's the one supposedly who is the lead dog, the attack dog. And then there is a claim that Hillary is autistic, that she doesn't have any empathy for people, that she's got to do any sympathy or empathy. She's a high-functioning autistic person. And so she doesn't have any feelings for other people. In other words, that she exhibits sociopathy. And that came out of the Watson clip yesterday. Many people, though, have called her a criminal over the years. She's a pathological liar. And so the question is, I'm just throwing this out there to you. I don't claim that I know anything about this, but does she have the kind of character, or is she associated with the kind of people that could have, you know, killed this guy? I mean, this could not possibly be, in my opinion, something random. I guess it could be, but why would they just go out of their way and kill somebody and not even take his stuff? So coincidental, then, therefore, that he's also the WikiLeaks source. I mean, it's just bizarre. So could somebody have found out about this guy through the FBI and then, you know, turned him in, and then maybe a random individual associated with the party. Maybe it's not the party. Maybe it's not the Hillary Clinton campaign that decided to get rid of him. Here's Charles Krauthammer on Hillary lying.
Off of this weekend where she's...
Hold on a second here. Let me adjust the sound for you. But, question is, could somebody in the DNC have killed this guy? Because it seems like more than a coincidence.
Referring back to the Fox News Sunday interview with Chris Wallace, take a listen and then Donald Trump's reaction to it.
Director Comey had said that my answers in my FBI interview were truthful. That's really the bottom line here. What I told the FBI, which he said was truthful, is consistent with what I have said publicly. So I may have short-circuited.
Unstable Hillary Clinton, and you saw that. Did you saw that where she basically short-circuited But I think that the people of this country don't want somebody that's going to short circuit up here. Hillary Clinton short circuited again, to use a now famous term.
And Donald Trump hitting it, his campaign hitting it on the web in a new video.
Hope you will compare what I'm proposing to what my opponent is talking about. I'm telling you right now, we are going to raise taxes on the middle class. So I may have short-circuited.
Trying to jump all over the short circuit.
What I like the best about the slip on the raising taxes, did you see how the crowd applauded and cheered, raised their signs?
I do think she did say we're not, but it kind of got jumbled in there. But right. Anyway.
But candidates often do that. I mean, I've been on here once or twice where you had to correct me, where I refer to the president as Osama, which was not exactly right. So look, this happens all the time. It's a bit of a cheap shot, but what the hell? There's a lot of cheap shots going on in this election. What she meant by short circuit, it is that she was answering a question that was slightly different. And it's not that she had a short circuit up in her neurons. So, look, this is just tit for tat. I thought what was interesting is, number one, she can't escape her lies on emails. There are so many lies now that she lies about her lying. And when you have to say, my testimony to the FBI, which the FBI director says was truthful, when somebody has to cite somebody else as an authority on the truthfulness of their speech, they're in trouble.
All right. So if somebody is a pathological liar, would that make them more likely to commit other crimes? I don't know. I mean, my natural instinct is to say this is a coincidence, but it seems like quite a coincidence to me. 523-1450-805-6180 to text. We'll be right back. AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, Kelly O'Connell. Hey, it's Kelly.
I would submit that anyone that is snuffed out like this, or they didn't want it to look like a robbery, was done to send a message to anybody that might consider being a leak in the future.
Good point. You want to say it on the air?
No, that's all right, Kelly. Leave it for you.
Thanks, man. All right, so just got a phone call from somebody who said that they assumed that any execution like this, if it was an execution, was for the purpose of putting out a sign or a message to people that anybody else who screws up like that is going to get whacked too. So I don't know. It's just, you know what? When something is too much of a coincidence, then you say it's not a coincidence. So this seems to me to be too much of a coincidence, and I don't think there's anything wrong with saying he could have been murdered. I mean, obviously he was murdered, but he could have been murdered by somebody who was mad at him. That's what it seems like. So what were people mad at? Apparently he was a very, very nice guy, or a person that people liked. Let's put it that way. I guess if you're a Democrat and he was a nice guy, he would have never cooperated with WikiLeaks and Assange and everything, but you know, the upshot is that he's dead. It was a murder. He was shot in the back. It was not a robbery. You can call it an attempted robbery, but you shoot somebody, is it that hard to get their wallet out or their phone out of their pocket or whatever? He was just on the phone. he might have dropped his phone even during the attack. I don't know. But on other news, Paul Ryan kicked the living, you know what, out of his opponent, Nalen. So that question that I would ask from that is, does that mean that Trump is in trouble because there was a lot of anti-Paul Ryan sentiment out there and it didn't really seem to translate into a stirring victory and to kick out, to canter Paul Ryan? It's just that didn't happen, so... All right. See, any other news? Malia Obama caught on camera smoking pot, and she was already tweaking. They've got her tweaking, and they've got her smoking pot. So, I guess even the top of the top kids can screw up, or maybe it's not a screw up in the Obama household. The only screw up, according to him, is getting pregnant. Zika cases rising in Miami. We now have deaths. Wages are dropping fast in America. Of course, that has nothing to do with illegals. Man beaten with crowbar for wearing Trump shirt. This comes after another guy was shot for, he was murdered for saying that Trump would be a good president. And Europe is buckling from the incredible number of refugees coming out of the Middle East. Arkansas rape victim comes forward after 40 years to call Hillary Clinton an out-and-out liar. And, all right, so that was the first hour, and we're going to go into the next hour. I'm going to focus on a little bit of weather, national weather, just a little bit, and then the question of whether it's a Christian position to support Trump, because there's this article that just came out that there's this pastor wrote that's caused a lot of anger. And also Weird Wednesday. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450. It is Wednesday on the 10th, 523 1450. It's raining outside a little bit. We've got a lot of moisture coming up from Javier, coming up from the south. So we'll be right back. 523-1450 to call in at 805-6180. Somebody sent me 20 texts. I'm not going to read 20 texts from one person. Good morning, 706. If you just tuned in, welcome to the show. We've been talking in the first hour about a very suspicious death. And the death had to do with a guy that was working for the DNC. Now, it turns out, from what we can gather, I think that Julian Assange felt like he had no other choice but to get the information out there. This guy was working for WikiLeaks. He was an idealistic, young, very patriotic person who was a data analyst, and he was the one from, I'm just gathering this from everything that I've read, he was the one who did the leaking, not the Russians. This is on the front page of Drudge right now. So he was shot, and he was shot after a fight, bruises on his hands, on his knees, on his face. So he was in a fist fight with somebody, apparently. And then at the end of it, he was shot in the back. So maybe he was knocked down on the ground and shot there. Maybe he was standing. Maybe he was running. But they were close enough to shoot him, probably with a pistol. And now the question is there, could there be possibly any, if this is the guy that caused Debbie Wasserman Schultz to get fired, and if this is the person that has really rattled the Democratic Party and the candidate, is it possible, either directly or indirectly, there is a connection? I don't know anything, but I do know that other than what I've told you, but there's a $20,000 reward from WikiLeaks. This is extraordinary, and if you could somehow tie this into the DNC or the Hillary campaign, her campaign, even in this day of just absolute indifference to crime, et cetera, I think her campaign obviously would be over, right? Okay, now here is a little bit on some of the weather that's going on. Surge of tropical moisture from Ex Javier, a flood threat for Southwest U.S., and that's what we're going through right now.
Cyclone Javier is now a post-tropical cyclone, and of course, it's still going to have some impacts, but some of the worst impacts, of course, over the last couple of days. You look at this video out of Veracruz. I mean,
this video from Veracruz, it just looks like Niagara Falls.
That is an unbelievable amount of water. There's so much terrain.
Except it's totally brown.
Rain out there in parts of Mexico. And this storm had a really bad history. It killed dozens of people in Mexico. It initially was a tropical storm and then Hurricane Earl out in the Gulf of Mexico. You remember that? And it hit Belize a couple of days ago. And then it basically just ran right across Mexico from east to west and ejected out into the Pacific, where it was basically the same storm, but they just gave it another name, Tropical Storm Javier, which never technically made landfall, but it did create a lot of wind and flooding problems there in Baja California. Now, I mentioned this is post-tropical. A lot of the times when we talk about a post-tropical storm, we're like, okay, that means the storm is done. But the thing with this one is that there's so much moisture associated with it, and you've got the monsoon going on in the southwest as well, and northern Mexico, by the way. Let's not forget about them. And there's still going to be a lot of rain, and a lot of that's going to be associated with the moisture from this storm, okay? So it's certainly going to fuel that a lot. We saw some flooding in Tucson on Tuesday morning. More of this stuff coming up over the next few days.
And we're talking 5 to 8 inches in an area that's only a couple hundred miles from here at the most. Here's a little bit on flooding in Tucson.
So the thing with this monsoon rain that we get in the desert southwest is that it's like you wake up one day, you know that somewhere is probably going to flood, but you can never pinpoint exactly where the exact showers and storms are going to pop up that are going to cause that flooding. And on Tuesday morning, unfortunately, it was one of the bigger cities in the desert southwest, Tucson, Arizona, that had to deal with some of this stuff. Look at how fast that water is moving. Anytime you see moving water, always a bad idea to drive into it. I hope that guy stopped there. It looks like it was the right decision. We had at least 5,000 homes and businesses without power, even had some flooding on I-10, but luckily, nobody was injured. These guys know how to deal with this stuff this time of year in the Southwest. And the thing is, there's going to be more of it on the way over the next couple of days, because not only do you have the regular monsoon moisture that's around, but we've also got Tropical Storm Javier. It's pretty far toward your south, but even with it being that far away, it's still streaming a lot of moisture up into the area. So through midweek, and that includes Thursday, there's still a lot more rain on the way. Once again, it's going to be tough to pinpoint exactly who gets wet, where, and when, but there's likely to be more scenes like this through Thursday.
And for some reason, this storm is still supposed to be directly over Tucson with 3 to 5 inches. So like something that you've never seen here that they would go through. Here's a little bit on the Gulf Coast.
So some of this flooding down along the Gulf Coast over the last couple of days has just been ridiculous. I mean, you look at the issues that some people are having here. This is video from Monday in Gulfport, Florida. You know, there are some spots that have seen over a foot of rain. Now, we knew there was going to be a lot of rain, and we knew it would probably be at least initially kind of concentrated north of Tampa along the west coast of Florida. But over the next couple of days, it's going to spread out a little bit. This is just kind of a spattering of the rain that's fallen already. Basically, everywhere you see that white color, that's where we've had over 10 inches of rain that has fallen, at least what radar is estimating. Usually the estimates have been pretty close. So just watch this stream of moisture that comes in from the Gulf, okay? And just watch what it does. It basically kind of sits over some of the same areas. I'm going to say especially from Tallahassee down toward areas just west of Tampa. And by the way, through the rest of the week, don't forget about other parts of the Gulf Coast, including Gulf Shores, Alabama, Mississippi, and even New Orleans as well. Flooding is a possibility there also.
3 to 5 inches all along the Gulf Coast there. So areas that have been inundated, they're still going to get more. Somebody just texted me and says, what difference does it make? Second here. What difference does it make that Seth Rich was killed now? All right. So, well, I mean, if it's a crime, if the crime can be tied into the Hillary campaign, either indirectly or directly, that's a huge deal. You know, it's not just a momentum shifter. It's the if Hillary Clinton knew anything, which, you know, would probably be impossible to hold. But, you know, if there was some movement in the party for revenge, let's just say that she knew that this, you know, that they were going to go after him somehow. But she didn't, maybe she didn't know they were going to try to murder him. But, you know, the Clintons have a lot of blood on their hands. They know where there's a lot of bodies that are buried. There's this insane list of people that were friends with the Clintons or knew the Clintons or got on the wrong side of the Clintons that are dead now. And I'm not saying it's anything more than a coincidence, but it's a hell of a coincidence. Yeah, there's, and the, you can add 3 or 5 or 10 more. So, you know, until I see facts in front of me, I'm not going to believe it, but I don't know. It's just there didn't seem to be any end to it, you know. And one of the things that you see is that Hillary Clinton is considered to be so important of a candidate that even though she's committing crimes and dodging prosecutions, she still has to be in there. And it's just, you know, I don't know. I mean, I don't see how if you're a Democrat that you're proud of what's going on in your party. I don't get it, you know? I don't get saying what apparently is said in some of these circles is that no matter what, always a Democrat, born a Democrat, die a Democrat. I mean, doesn't your party get so corrupt that you personally get sick of it? Now, you might turn around and say, well, the GOP's corrupt too. Yeah, I talk about that all the time. It's sickening. It's sickening that at the top levels, there seems to be one party, and it's the party of the elites. And I know that term is thrown around a lot, but. All right, let me see what I can find for you on this debate. Now, the guy's name, I got a book by this guy. His name's Wayne Grudem, and he wrote a book, and I'm trying to remember the name of it. It's something like the Bible and Politics or something, but he's a deep, and the book is excellent. I haven't read the whole thing, but he's a theologian, you know, so, and there's this huge, well, here, let me get the name of this book here. I'm opening up his Amazon page. Okay, Politics According to the Bible. I have a copy of that in my Kindle, and I need to spend some more time studying. But anyway, he's a guy that has thought deeply about this stuff. We'll come back and talk about his article on Trump, whether Trump could be the choice. 716 AM, Las Cruces AM, 1450, 523, 1450 on KOBE. And appreciate you tuning in today. 523-1450 to call in 805-6180 to text. We'll be back. Wayne Grudem is a very, very influential guy, and he works at the Phoenix Seminary. And he's written a lot of books on, you know, basic theology and such. He also wrote a book on politics in the Bible. All right. He wrote something and published it in Town Hall, published it on July the 28th, and it has created a firestorm, and I thought you might find it interesting. Why voting for Donald Trump is a morally good choice. Here is just the beginning of the article. Some of my Christian friends tell me they can't in good conscience vote for Donald Trump because when faced with a choice between, quote, the lesser of two evils, the morally right thing is to choose neither one. They recommend voting for a third party or write-in candidate. As a professor who has taught Christian ethics for 39 years, I think their analysis is incorrect. Now that Trump has won the GOP nomination, I think voting for Trump is a morally good choice. American citizens need patience with each other in this difficult political season. Close friends are inevitably going to make different decisions about the election. We still need to respect each other and thank God that we live in a democracy with freedom to differ about politics. And we need to keep talking with each other because democracies function best when thoughtful citizens can calmly and patiently dialogue about the reasons for their differences. This is my contribution to that discussion. I want to point out one thing. There are a number of people that I've met in my life who seem to think that, or seem to believe that if they are a good Christian, if they've studied the Bible, if they prayed or thought deeply about something, or maybe even just their gut, without any deep thought, their gut will tell them a position on an issue that is from God, and you can't really disagree with them because they're representing God somehow. And, I guess if you're an atheist or an agnostic, that this topic is not maybe terribly interesting right now. But politics always is influenced by religion, no matter what part of the world you live in. But I think, on the other hand, that in history, profound and deep Christians, very historically influential Christians, have differed on basic things, and I think it is a mistake for a Christian to think there is one position and you easily come to that. Now, I'll add out on something else that's more secular, but there's a lot of people out there that if you express any support for Trump, they treat you like you're a mentally handicapped child. And this is the conceit of the left, and sometimes the right. The left embraces truths, and I'd give this the same analysis I would this idea that there is one clear position for anybody who's a sincere Christian on any topic. There is this sense out there that is really the kind of the ethos or the spirit of liberalism is that there are clearly obvious choices that any smart person with some education who's sincere and wants to do the right thing will find these things and they will embrace them. And then anybody else who disagrees with them are ignorant, they're lacking goodwill, they're mentally handicapped, or they're evil. And this is how the left interacts with people on the right in general. What do you mean you don't believe in global warming, you pig ignorant, anti-scientific redneck? There's no such thing as therefore, you draw the conclusion, there's no such thing as a good faith disagreement with these people because you're not mistaken, you're morally incapacitated and on the verge of evil. So I think these are good debates to have, good things to argue about, and to recall that America came out of the ferment of Europe. We were ejected from Europe when it became intolerable to live there under good conscience as Christians. And then we moved here and we began a debate about what a good society looked like, looks like, which ended up being creating the Constitution and the Declaration. Here we have a call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this? Neil Hooks.
Hey, this is Neil. How you doing?
Neil Hooks, what's going on, man?
Hello, did I lose you?
Neil, please speak, buddy. Come on, you got the microphone. Go ahead.
Hey, you know, the moral argument for voting for Trump is really quite simple. I'm not voting for my pastor. I'm voting for a CEO of the country.
Right.
And politics is changed in increments. You win, just like Thomas Jefferson said, the road to liberty is gained in inches. So you vote for the lesser of two evils is always the option, because we're talking about secular men, essentially, men and women. So the moral argument to vote for Trump is that if you don't vote for Trump and you're normally a Republican voter, you just gave Hillary at least half a vote by not voting for Trump. So you're enabling Hillary to be elected. What's your moral argument against that? If somebody says, if you were to vote for Hillary as a conservative Christian Republican, they'd say, oh my gosh, that would be immoral. Well, you're helping her indirectly.
Yeah. Correct. I agree.
All right. Have a good day.
You too. Thanks for the call. All right. So there is your candidate for the Mesilla House race against the gay evangelist, Bill McCamley, also known as the Shah of Sodom. Anyway, and Neil Hooks there. But all right, so let's. Here's the thing. It's like anything that, and this is just my opinion, but I think it's proven in history, you have to have principled debates over things. And I know, you know, people get impassioned and emotional and stuff, and their idea, and they fall in love with their ideas or whatever. People get their ideas from other people to begin with. So you got to be careful taking on ideas that you haven't thought through yourself. But getting into this article right here, a good candidate with flaws. I do not think that voting for Donald Trump is a morally evil choice, because there is nothing morally wrong with voting for a flawed candidate if you think he will do more good for a nation than his opponent. In fact, it is the morally right thing to do. I did not support Trump in the primary season. I even spoke against him at a pastor's conference in February, but now I plan to vote for him. I do not think it is right to call him an evil candidate. I think rather he is a good candidate with flaws. Now, better than a good candidate with flies. But, you know, the thing is that there is this, you pick up themes. Some of them are spoken and more of them are kind of implied. There's an implied theme here that Donald Trump is a uniquely bad person in American politics. And he's worse than, for instance, Aaron Burr, who tried to create his own country in the middle of our country. Well, I guess it would have been at that time, it would have been outside of the bounds, but he wanted to be king of his own country. And he ended up shooting Alexander Hamilton and killed him in a duel. And he's considered to be Aaron Burr was an incredibly talented person. And he went to Princeton, or was it Rutgers? But he was considered to be the smartest person to this day who had ever gone to the school he went to. And now I got to find out. But anyway, there's this idea that if Trump does something, it's 10 times worse than if Hillary does it. Where does that idea come from? I mean, what's so bad about this guy? Here's the thing that I don't really buy into. I don't buy into this idea that since he's outside of the system, he's cannot be trusted. He will inherently move towards the worst policy positions. He's a bad guy. He's vicious. He, takes cheap shots. And I mean, you have to judge the fruit by the tree by its fruit. And it seems like the actions of Hillary are as bad or worse of anything that people claim that Trump will do when he gets into office. So I don't really buy into this, but it's become this kind of self-fulfilling. That's part of the beginning of the show was focusing on that, is that the media has decided now that Trump must die so that liberalism can live. That's how I see it. 523-1450, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, and 805-6180-2 text. We'll be back to continue on with whether Trump could be a Christian's choice. Okay, 7:34, and just got a call from Neil, who was running for office out of Mesilla. All right, here is just a little bit. Now, all right, so let me get back to this article just a little bit more. He's a good candidate with flaws, says theologian. Wayne Grudem. Let me ask you this: why, if Hillary and Trump do the same thing, would Hillary be given more excuses for it? Well, I think part of it is the vast majority of it is the media defending her. But, you know, there's a lot of people out there that support the Trump because they don't think he's a fatally flawed person. But even if he was a very flawed person, How do those flaws end up leading you to support Hillary? Let's just say there was two choices out there, because let's be totally honest. If you're voting for, if you're the kind of a Christian, you're kind of a pure-hearted, you know, I'm never going to do anything wrong kind of a person, which is, I hate to tell you this, you're lying to yourself already. All people do evil. What makes you think that, I mean, if you vote for Tarian or the third party, it's, you know, you might have a pure vote, but it's actually going to work against the bigger picture. If it's Hillary and Trump, I honestly cannot understand the supporting Hillary, because she is mendacious. She is a confabulator, a person who recreates reality every time she talks. Every time she talks, there's lies. She lies about lying. She was involved in scandals and is totally unrepentant and refuses to admit she was wrong. She has been involved in a lot of other things, and she's involved right now in a fraudulent undertaking worth $100 billion, the Clinton Foundation, and they point fingers at Trump for being an evil billionaire. And I mean, it's just the hypocrisy is astounding. All right, so he argues seeking the good of the nation, the welfare of the nation, the defense of the nation, you choose Trump, that if the Supreme Court goes over to Clinton, imagine the damage done on abortion, religious liberty, Christian business owners, Christian schools and colleges, churches, all these different issues, criminalizing dissent, the Supreme Court with Trump as president, et cetera. All right, so this is a very long article. I'm going to play for you a little bit of a clip on Dr. Wayne Grudem on the U.S. Supreme Court in the 2016 election. Now, this is from March, so just bear in mind.
Is challenging faith leaders to educate their congregations on the importance of the 2016 election. Dr. Grudem, the author of more than 20 books, including Politics According to the Bible, led the recent Illinois Family Institute Worldview Conference at the Village Church of Barrington. Before the conference, he spoke to about 40 faith leaders who met at the church. Topics included the...
All right, so let me give you, because I've got to fast forward that one to the right place. Here is a little introduction on politics according to the Bible, just a little bit here, just to kind of whet your appetite. And I, you know, if for the Kathys out there who are upset to hear the word religion, most people in this country, 70-80% claim to be Christian. So this should directly be of interest to any of these people. I'm really sick and tired of people who just try to kill religion in the crib as a topic, because we're supposed to have evolved beyond that, and it's just not a topic for mixed company for the public. It's an idiotic position.
Kent, where's Kent? Oh, he stepped out. Oh, I'm not going to say anything about him then. Thank you, Kent Ostrander. And do you mind if I tell?
All right, so this is not quite queued up either. I don't want to waste your time on marginalia. Let's take a little break here and I'll have these set up. But the question is, could a Christian in good faith, 523-1450, support Donald Trump? Or would you have to go third party? Or would you hold your nose and vote for a woman who is radically in favor of abortion to the point where she says fetuses never have any rights? Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450. 523-1450, 805-6180 to text. Is on what's going on in the Supreme Court into the 2016 election. Here's Wayne Grudem.
Love this nation. And I'm deeply concerned about its future. First, Justice Scalia and his departure. Fox News commentator Charles Krauthammer said one time, in the writing of the United States Constitution, there was assembled the greatest collection of political geniuses ever in one place at one time in the history of the world. And a number of people have said, next to the Bible, the Constitution of the United States is the most incredible document ever written by human beings. When the founders of the United States were setting up the government of the United States, they faced this question: how can we give the federal government enough power to govern effectively over the people, and at the same time protect the people from a government having too much power, especially concentrated in the hands of one person or a small group of people? So there's a balance between giving the government power and protecting the people from the government. Now, one of the major questions they had to ask was, who is going to have the highest power in the nation? Should it be the president? Should it be the Congress? Should it be the courts? What shall we do? What shall we do? And they decided none of the above. They decided instead of having any person or group of persons or office holder or group of office holders have the highest power in the highest power in the nation will belong to a document, the Constitution. And those three branches of government had to be subject to the Constitution and do what the Constitution says. So the Constitution is the highest law in the land. If Romans 13:1 says, let every person be subject to the governing authorities, then that follows that it's telling us to be subject to the Constitution. And its meaning is originally written because that's what it was intended to say, and that's what it said, and that's what Justice Scalia upheld. Now, in the United States, over the past several decades, a different view of the Constitution has arisen. Instead of saying the Constitution means what it originally meant when it was written, there's a legal theory that says the Constitution is a living document, and we take the general spirit of the Constitution and then decide what we think that general spirit of the Constitution means today. Now, what happened in 1973? Was a majority of justices on the Supreme Court said the 14th Amendment, which was passed in 1868, and which guaranteed freedom and property and freedom and rights to freed slaves, and said no person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, 1868, they said, oh, we just noticed that that guarantees a right to abortion. A right to abortion. Doesn't say anything about abortion. All states and territories had laws or restrictions on abortions at that time, and none of them were struck down or challenged by the 14th Amendment. The 14th Amendment had nothing to do with abortion. But these majority of the Supreme Court justices said, it's now in the Constitution. And people said, well, we don't see it there. Too bad. We say it's there, so it is. That's Roe v. Wade. That enforced the right on the whole United States that imposed the protection of a woman's right to get an abortion, essentially as it worked out through the entire life of the unborn child's pregnancy, unborn child's term of pregnancy. Once that happened, nobody has any power to change it. Does that make sense? The president can disagree with it, but it's the Constitution. He can't change the Constitution. The court, I mean, the legislatures can pass laws. The U.S. Senate and the U.S. Congress could pass laws unanimously saying this is wrong, and the Supreme Court would say, sorry, your law that you just passed is unconstitutional, and we're the boss. So by being able to say what is in the Constitution, they gained the ability to govern arbitrarily the entire nation. And they're not elected. And they're appointed for life. So they became the most powerful group in the nation. Now that's how we got same-sex marriage, which John just mentioned. 5-4, the justices said, we find in that same 14th Amendment, let me just read the 14th Amendment to you here. See if you can see the protection of same-sex marriage in this amendment. Nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Oh, that says same-sex marriage. Nobody ever thought it did, but now we say it did. And the problem is, on the Supreme Court was divided. 4 justices said the law means what it originally intended to say. Scalia, Thomas, Alito, and Roberts. They have an originalist view of the Constitution. 4 justices, Ginsburg, Sotomayor, Kagan, and Breyer, have this living Constitution view. So it's 4-4, 4-4, and in the middle is Anthony Kennedy. He went with same-sex marriage, so 5-4, we got same-sex marriage forced on the nation, and there is nothing anybody can do to change it, unless he changes the Supreme Court. Justice Scalia has just died. Now, whereas it was 4-4 with the swing vote in the middle, now it's 4-3 with a swing vote in the middle. And no 5-4 decision upholding the original meaning of the Constitution can get through anymore. So that's why this election is about the future of the nation. Because if a president is elected who puts on the court a 5th justice who holds this living Constitution view, it's the end of the country as we know it. It's all over. You can do nothing about it for a generation or two. And when that happens, if it happens, 10 or 20 years later, your grandchildren will say, where were you? What were you doing when the nation was lost? Here's what could happen.
All right. Kind of interesting, huh? So here's what I don't understand. The number of Republicans attacking Trump who act like there's a pure party out there. The GOP is a pure party that is being destroyed or sullied by Trump. Really, I didn't notice there was a pure party out there. I thought it was full of garbage already. And in addition to that, you've got someone who's willing to stand up on a number of important issues. Hillary, as far as I can tell, is not going to stand up for anything. To accept, if you get a Hillary Clinton presidency, you accept a functionally speaking, an economy operating at below 2%, increase in illegal immigrants from the Middle East 500%, an open borders policy. I mean, you could go on and on, but packing the Supreme Court full of far leftists will radically change the country. And we're sitting here trying to figure out if Trump's hair or the fact that he's insulted a few people is too obnoxious. I mean, I don't even really understand what the debate's over. 750 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, AM KOBE. 523 1450 and 805 6180 to text. We'll be back. There is a new poll that's come out that says Trump is moving up again. This is a very, very dynamic race, and there's going to be ups and downs. And what I'm waiting for is for the debates to occur. I'm leaving the topic of Wayne Grudem in his article. You can think about that. Look him up on the internet, whatever. But great, he's got great videos on YouTube. The argument that he's making is, all things considered, we have much more to lose been gained by blocking Trump. He's against another candidate. One of two candidates will win, and all you have to do is kind of measure up what the impact is going to be. It's going to be a third term and possibly a fourth term for Obama. And I mean, just on economics alone, let's put aside whether he was called here as a messiah, a secular messiah, to bring us free health care and globalization. How can we possibly survive as a nation under 2% growth? I mean, the growth now is 1.2%. I heard a video last night that said that a guy on there, an economist, said, we are in another recession. Businesses are in another recession. It's the worst recovery since the 1940s. In other words, you know, we go from the Great Depression into this war. The war is supposedly ends the depression. But I mean, it has been 50 or 60 years since we've had the kind of economic situation as we've had now. And Obama gets up there and says, if it wasn't for me, we would have really, you know, had a financial collapse. I mean, his entire term is two terms have been a financial collapse. So, all right. So here is an article that's come out in the Daily Mail. Child rape victim comes forward for the first time in 40 years to call Hillary Clinton a liar who defended her rapist by smearing her, blocking evidence, and callously laughing that she knew he was guilty. Hillary Clinton is not for women and children, says Kathy Shelton, 54, who was 12 years old when she was raped by Thomas Alford Taylor in Arkansas. Clinton was the rapist's defense lawyer, pleading him down to unlawful fondling of a minor. The 41-year-old drifter served less than a year in prison. The plea came after Clinton was able to block the admission of forensic evidence that linked her client to the crime. Shelton says she's furious that Clinton has been portraying herself as a lifelong advocate of women and girls on the campaign trail. Clinton accused Shelton of seeking out older men in the case and demanding she undergo a grueling court-ordered psychiatric examination. The presidential candidate later laughed when discussing aspects of the case in a recently unearthed audio-taped interview in the 1980s. And here's a little bit of an interview from this lady. This is the only thing I could find on the net so far.
If I had to meet her in person, it would be very hard for me not to walk up and smack her. I know that sounds mean. You tried to get the police report and it was lost in a flood. Supposedly that's what happened. Is this sick?
Sorry about the music behind it. It's kind of overwhelming. It's also, this is from the Daily Mail, but anyway, so there's a lot more information that's going to come out in these races. So going back over the show, we first covered Seth Rich, the guy that was killed working for the DNC. Now he has been revealed as the source for the leaks. It wasn't the Russians at all. He was the source of the leaks. He was not robbed, but he was shot in the back. He was in a fistfight and shot in the back and murdered. Who did it? Is it possibly, could it possibly be linked to the DNC? I have no idea, but I'll only believe it when I see the evidence. And then the question is, could a Christian vote for Donald Trump? And we have a phone call. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Yeah, it's Tom.
Hey, good morning, Tom.
Hey, good morning. I think that people have become so used to living on the government dole that it doesn't matter what Hillary does. They want a continuation Obama.
Not everybody.
Well, not me either, but I'm just seeing like a trend of that, you know, that I see it in our society here, you know, that everybody's on assistance and everything like that here. They don't want to lose that.
We need a revival. We need to teach people that it's, you know, expose them to the truth. It's a lot more fun and it's a lot better for your family to not be on state aid. Not, I think a lot of people on state aid secretly would not like to be in a better situation.
Hopefully. Okay, yeah. Kelly. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Tom. All right, so the question is, could a Christian in good conscience vote for Trump? And it is this guy Wayne Grudem's position that there's one morally supportable choice. I honestly, so much of this rejection of Trump, like by Susan Collins from Maine, the senator, I will never vote for Donald Trump, has a theatrical nature. It's like attacking Sarah Palin was, for Republicans, was this huge proof that you're open-minded, that you're advanced and you're thinking, which I thought was shameful. Once again, a lot of these people that are coming out for Trump are secret liberals who wanted to come out for a long time anyway. 759 Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450 to call in tomorrow. Hope you have a great day, and I think we're going to get some rain. Take care. Have a good one. Ciao.